questions that we asked. John was missing from that because he wasn't able to get computer access. So, with no further ado, we shall have each one of the four candidates take 3 minutes to do an opening statement. Tom is going to be the timekeeper on that. Then we'll just open up for questions and answers, and we'll try and go, start with Steve, and then Brian, Vince, and then we'll start over here, and we'll, go with Glenna, and then that way we'll try and break it up a little bit so that we mix and match how people begin and end. Okay, so.
I also would like to add that if you can project, we are recording so that the discussion today can be shared later on local community radio stations and also on the web.
So, Steve, would you like to begin this round? Just take 3 minutes or less and do an opening statement of any topic at all.
Thank you. I will. I'm Steve Hudson from San Juan, and I'd like to thank you for putting on this forum. It's the only one in the county that I'm aware of. Congratulations, Lopez.
Leading the way.
And for me, especially as a member and a recently interested student in what the co-op is doing, broadband is the most pressing issue because of its impact and controversy. So that's what most of my comments have to do with. I'm pleased with most everything else, virtually everything else that I am aware of that Opaco is doing. But to me, this is more than just an election of directors. This is sort of an opportunity to seriously consider what broadband means for Opaco, what the impact might be, what the risks are, and whether or not the members themselves need more information and ought to have the opportunity to exercise their democratic control of the co-op prior to a massive commitment on their behalf. The potential for broadband to financially destabilize Opaco appears to be real and may make future rate increases necessary. The Plan A, as it was presented, was it just last year, appeared to raise the debt-to-capital ratio from under 30% to over 70%, which is significant. Increased the debt from around $16 million to around $67 million. Resulted in losses for the entire co-op of $6 to $7 million for the first 4 years in total, and resulted in nearly $10 million in losses for Island Network in the first 7 years. And the projected operating expenses per year for Island Network upon build out was around $7 million a year.
How's he doing on time, John?
Good. Got a little left, but I probably have more words than I do time. Some observations about the numbers of Island Network so far, according to the 2013, 30 seconds left. I may have to move a lot of this to the last 2 minutes.
Okay, you can do during questions and answers, feel free to just...
Okay. Well, I won't try to rattle through this too quickly. You can get a feel for what my primary concerns are and what my questions are, and I look forward to the opportunity to kick this around.
Thank you.
I'd like to hear from an incumbent next.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Can we go out of order?
Sure.
We can go out of order.
No, I think we should stick with the rules that you said.
Well, it doesn't really matter.
Spoken like a true
doesn't
judge.
It doesn't really matter to me. But if you want to go, Vince,
sure.
And then back
I'll
to
I'll be
Brian,
happy. I'll be happy. Thank you. Yeah. So I'm Vince DeCunis from San Juan Island. I'm standing for re-election for second term board of Opaco. So I'd like to thank Tom and Sandy for putting this on and giving us a chance to share our views on topics that hopefully are of interest to you today. I'd also like to extend a hand of thanks to the hardworking men and women of Opelco. I've had the privilege of working in some really fine places like Hewlett-Packard and Agilent and National Aeronautics and Space Administration over the years, which were full of top-notch people. And I got to say, bar none, that the ones that I've been working with at Opelco match up to any of them. So it's a proud organization, and we're in the hands of some really good people there. Opelco delivers the power we depend on. The staff and the management carry out the day-to-day activities that are necessary for the transmission and distribution of electrical power. With the potential increase in the member-owned renewable generation, we're possibly in the community solar gardens. You could say we might be in the generation business also. The board is responsible for hiring the general manager and for the oversight of the operation of Opelco, both short-term and long-term. You, the members, hire the board, and here we are at election time again. My background's in the ballot book, so I'm not going to go over it in great detail if you're interested in there, but I spent 30 years working in technology-related fields. I started out climbing antennas and building cables to designing the SCADA systems like Opelco uses, writing software, managing hardware and software, managing entire business units, strategic planning at the corporate level, doing mergers and acquisitions. Then I took a huge right turn and I wound up in the life sciences working with systems for research into DNA, proteins, and pharmaceutical research. It's like getting a degree in molecular biology. Then I got to do life as a startup company doing contract research and materials company. I had to shepherd 134 PhDs that would work with R&D scientists of global companies to develop new materials for new products. My goals, and another term on the board should I be re-elected, are, I won't even have to use it all, keep Opelco's people and its electrical products safe. It may sound like a cliche, but safety is job number one, and improving its culture of safety is everybody's job in the organization. Keep working on the long-term power resource planning process, which in my mind is every bit as important as broadband. It's keeping a good relationship with Bonneville Power Administration, which is our primary supplier, energy conservation and efficiency, local generation, and securing long-term alternate resources. Get the plan finished on how to best utilize the resources we've already got and are planning to build out for the electrical grid to be best used by the community to improve broadband. Keep looking for ways that Opelco can help the community. Thank you.
Brian, and then we'll have
fun. Sure. Well, I'm kind of wondering why I'm here. So I went back and thought about it. How did I end up here? I've been on the island for about 7 years now, and I have not voted in a single Opelco election because Opelco runs just fine as a power company. I used to live in the Santa Cruz Mountains in California, and electricity there was much more spotty, and getting electricity was much more difficult. So I built a house up here on the island and interfaced with Opelco and had a very pleasant experience. It was very straightforward. And then I noticed that they had some fiber in the ground, and it seemed obvious to me that we should be able to take advantage of that because it's a member-owned co-op, so it's basically our fiber. And so I was pretty excited when they talked about getting access to the fiber last year. But when the plan came out, I was, A, amazed by the amount of controversy over it. But I would listen to a lot of people talking about the various things they were concerned about and some of the issues and some of the questions, many of them technical, many of them business-related. And so I looked at the whole plan and said, although technically you have this monstrous cover-the-county thing nailed down, the messaging to the public is less than transparent. A lot of questions weren't answered. A lot of questions took too long to answer. When you put a question up to somebody about their plan and you don't get a quick response, that means one of two things. Either they haven't thought about it or they don't like the answer. So that caused me some concern. So when that all died away, and perhaps it should have, perhaps it shouldn't, that's water under the bridge. I looked at, okay, so how am I going to connect to get some better connectivity? So I'm making some steps on my own to do that. I'm also involved with amateur radio, and I have a company building amateur radio networks, and I support the community in backup situations like when the cable was cut. So when asked by the nominating committee recently if I would be interested in taking some of my background and expertise in actually building out networks, thank you, and assisting with the board, I leapt the chance. So I'm here to provide Oh, I'm going to go take a stab. I'm sitting in the middle for a reason. I'm definitely in favor of getting connectivity to those people who want it. I'm not as aggressive as the original plan of we have to cover the county down to every man, woman, and child, whether they want it or not. So I'm sitting in the middle, and I'm going to stay here. Thank you.
Well, I'm going to stand so you can see me, so I can be on a level playing field with these big guys here. I'm Glenna Hall. I'm the other District 1 member of the Opalco board, and I'm seeking another term in order to continue what we've been doing on the board. I'm not going to take a whole lot of time telling you who I am. My bio is, I think, in front of you someplace. I am, however, and I'll mention it a little bit, I'm a retired King County Superior Court judge. Both as a judge and in my previous career as a practicing lawyer, I was heavily involved in dispute resolution, and so I'm trained in mediation. I've had training in management, and I've also been trained in reading complex financial statements, which is relevant to this election because there's a lot of information available. There's a lot up on Opalco's website, and I again urge you to take a look at that because that's where the facts are. Since finishing law school, which incidentally I had mistakenly thought was a midlife career change, it turned out it wasn't as mid as I feared. I've been involved in doing a lot of board work. I've run both private organizations and government bodies. Let me back up a little bit. I talked about looking at the financials of Opalco's. As a judge, I spent all day, every day, listening to evidence and listening to determine what was credible and reliable. And I didn't make decisions based on supposition or anything somebody told me or stuff that just popped into my head or my own biases. And that's how we should all make decisions. And I'm assuming that everybody in this room, when they come and look at their ballot, after having learned some facts, will vote based on reliable evidence and facts. I do wholeheartedly favor island residents having the opportunity to have good internet connectivity, and I no longer believe that's possible through CenturyLink. I attended, for example, the hearing that the Transportation Utilities Commission had up here, at which Councilmember Jarman was there, and nobody seemed to have a lot of faith in CenturyLink anymore. I think we were asked during the November outage to please do something about that, to step in. I don't know quite why people are still talking about the original plan. That's not where we are. The County Council asked us to do something. The Economic Development Commission asked us to do something. And we are going to sit down and make a very, very good, careful plan before we start doing anything wild. And I will be answering questions as they come up.
Great. Thank you. So, you all, we're going to have questions and answer time. So, get what that means? Questions and not speeches from the audience part, okay? The questions are all allowed. What we'd like to do is give everybody a chance to ask one question first. And then if we have more time and space, if you have a second question, please feel free to ask it. When you do ask your question, please say whether or not you are asking it to the incumbents, you're asking it of everybody, or just what your preference is, okay? So I have an idea. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, so we're good. So, hey, you had your hand up first.
Yes, this is of everybody. I just learned today in a conversation that board members of Opalco can draw $20,000 a year as a stipend.
I didn't know that.
$25,000?
Can we?
That's a top one.
And so I wanted to know if you do, if you have as an incumbent, and if you plan to, because I know in the past people took much less.
No, I've never, no one ever said anything about that to me. Where'd you get that information?
Oh, it's privileged.
Oh. Well, it's certainly been, it's really privileged because I never heard of it. Mm. And I don't take $25,000.
Well, I just know that
I wouldn't take $25,000. That would be inappropriate.
Okay, good.
I was just going to say the compensation is $200 per board meeting throughout the year. And then there's an insurance policy which is made available for purchasing, which Opelco kicks in just like it does for its employees, but you also, out of your $200, about 80% of that goes out of it back towards the insurance policy if you choose to purchase it. So we wind up making about $20 per meeting, I think it is.
I haven't heard anything about any stipend of any kind. I was told the story that Vince just related, the compensation was limited to...
Okay. Get some mileage sometimes.
Yeah, but just a little thing is it,
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, I can just back up on the question.
Steve would like to answer first.
I was surprised to become aware of the compensation available for directors, because when I initially considered this to be a candidate, I was not aware there was any. I've seen a couple of tax returns that indicate that two, perhaps three, for a couple of years in a row.
Sorry, there's talking and I can't hear. So go ahead, please.
Two, perhaps three of the directors on the board did receive between $20,000 and $25,000 a year in compensation. And my understanding of the formula for the compensation is that it's $250 per board meeting and $200 a day while on company business. If you do the math and subtract some regularly scheduled board meetings, you still have over $20,000, and you kind of wonder what the extra 100 days or so might have been spent on myself. But so that's what little I know about this.
Wait a minute, you guys. Okay, so some things come up here, and there's lots of who said, what said, da-da-da-da-da, because Kay asked a question. You have some information. These two are board members. They have some information. So you've just spoken. I'd like to give you two, as incumbents, a chance to speak briefly on what Steve has just said, because he seems to have some added information that neither of you had.
Well, okay, one, I just... mailed my taxes in, so I can tell you what my 1099 had on it. The numbers, when you look on the 990 form for the tax return, if you see the directors down there with money on it, what that is the value of the insurance policy that Opelco is providing to a director. So the entire value of that insurance gets applied to you as a, it comes in as a 1099 miscellaneous form, which that you've got to declare that as income and pay taxes on it, basically. So that is it. The $200 per day traveling, I wish I would have known about that, because I've got 3 years of it to catch if it exists at all. So it may be there someplace, but you know, I've never taken a penny of it for traveling purposes. So,
well, and Glenna,
I was given a briefing when I was first appointed, and I was told that I would receive, now I'm not sure whether it's $200 or $250 a day for meeting days. I believe there's some other stipend if you spend a whole day. I've spent a lot of time doing stuff for Opelco for nothing. I don't take the insurance, and so probably my 1099 looked a lot different from Vince's. It just shows the meeting and the $250 stipend. Nobody has ever said a word about $25,000 a year. There are two other board members in the audience. I'll just ask them to raise their hands if they heard about $25,000 stipend. You have?
What is it?
There is no $25,000 stipend. What Vince said is precisely...
So it's the value of the insurance. Exactly. And that's why mine looks a lot different, because I don't get the insurance. I have
insurance. It's the value of the insurance... of which Opelco pays 80%, something like that.
So my,
we pay 20%.
My 1099...
And it's the value of the insurance that is placed on the IRS form as compensation.
And just
that's
to...
That's the reason it looks like we're getting paid 20%.
Thank you. Okay, everybody. Because it sounds like what happens is when members pull down the tax return from Opelco, and they see a number, say $25,000, next to a board member's name, that from what I'm gathering here, if it's $20,000, approximately $16,000 of that is considered value for insurance payments, and the other part of it seems to be $200 or $250 per meeting. And that's what I'm gathering from what has been said here. So thank you for the clarification, because that has been circulated around, so now we understand that. Okay, now, there was somebody else who had their hand up. Was it Alex? Did you have your hand?
Sure, I'll ask a question. Yeah. I'd like to ask it of the incumbents. I'm a 25-year member of the cooperative. My question is about either the proposed or the adopted changes in the, I think it's in the bylaws. This is the, there are two elements that the board has invested a great deal of legal expense in. One is changes to the activities of board members in terms of their ability to speak as individuals in the public. The other one has to do with perceived conflicts of interest. I'd like to focus only on the first of those. And this was an issue that Council Member Jarman raised in his letter. Opalco has not really responded to that other than to say that Opalco, these changes are being made to increase, not decrease, transparency within Opalco. First of all, for my information, and you can answer the question, have these been adopted? Second, can you explain in specifics how you believe these changes will in fact increase transparency rather than, in a common reading of it, despite the fact in a common reading they clearly do not?
So are you directing that just to Ben, say, Glenna?
Yes.
Okay, so Glenna, I'd like you to start first this time.
First of all, I think a read of the Articles of Incorporation and bylaws generally will show, especially with comparison to other co-ops, similar co-ops, that all this stuff I suspect was handed down 50 years ago from National Rural Electric Co-op Association, because if you look at other co-ops' governing documents, they're pretty similar. They're 50 years old. We have a new law firm that's starting to take a look to bring those into conformity with current corporate law of the state of Washington, and also to get them to be internally consistent. So to answer, let me take your question apart and answer it as you, maybe not in the same order that you asked it, but as you asked it. One, the changes that I think you're referring to with regard to the hope that board members will speak with one voice once something's been adopted, that's in policy number one, which has not been adopted. Bob's back in the room. He and I have been sort of going back and forth about it. It's been on the agenda several different times. We haven't adopted it. We haven't arrived at a decision. I don't know if I have enough time to run through how a corporation's governing documents fit together. Maybe you don't want to know that, so unless you express a desire to do it, I will. I won't. I'll skip that. The thing you're referring to that was on the website that talked about making things more democratic than not was a different bylaw. I think it was bylaw one, wasn't it? It was one of the bylaws. Anyway, it's the one that governs elections, member responsibilities, and specifically, the particular part of it was removal of directors. When we took a look at it after having not seen it, really, I mean, you know how it is with that kind of document. You look at it and your eyes slide over it and you just don't really pay much attention to it. The procedure that was set forth in that bylaw would have had five members, I think it was five, maybe it was ten, able to bring a petition to remove a director. That then got referred to the annual general meeting. There was no requirement that there be any specification as to what the 10 members were alleging. or that anybody be informed about it. Then the only people who got to vote on whether to remove a director, the way it was written, was at the people who were attending the annual general meeting. I'm told that, what do you think the number of member votes that are there?
220.
Something like 220 people attend the meeting on the ferry. Therefore, since there was no provision in the bylaw for the general membership getting to vote the way we now all do by electronic voting and mailed-in ballots, only 220 people could have gotten to vote on that. Because the annual general meeting was coming up soon, the lawyers said we really should do something about this quickly. So we did. And what we now have is a provision by which everybody gets notified if there's such a request to remove directors, and everybody, every member, can vote on it. I think that's what you were asking.
No, I was asking about policy one, and you kind of slid by policy one.
Okay, let me then come back to what you were asking. I've been looking at handbooks for nonprofit corporation boards and some other things. It's almost universal, is a best practice for a board to adopt a policy, or at least to unwrittenly, if necessary, adopt a policy that they support the decisions that the board make. It's not intended to throttle their saying, especially, for example, like now in an election campaign, they're specifically allowed to go off the reservation, so to speak. The intention is that the board supports the corporation. If board members were to, after a vote was taken and they dissent and what they had to say in dissent is on the record, if they then go and start trying to undermine the decision that the board has taken by a majority vote, it's considered that it's inappropriate by and large in order to make sure that the corporation itself is credible, that people aren't thinking, boy, these people really don't have it together. They're all saying different things after the action's taken. The policy is not one of the bylaws or articles of incorporation. It's more of a guideline. It's not enforceable. It's intended that board of directors supports its own decisions, and it's as simple as that. It's very clear that if somebody, and if necessary, when we get our, if we ever finish it, it'll say in there, if I have my way, it'll say that this doesn't prevent a director from, if they're asked, why did you vote against it, from saying why they voted against it. It's never in anybody's intention to muzzle anybody.
Alex, is that answer your question from, are you feeling satisfied that your question was heard and that it was answered? I'm not saying you like the answer. I'm just saying, do you feel like she heard your question and has it been answered? If not, you can restate it if you feel it's needed. And also, Vince has not had a chance yet.
I would let the other board members speak to this. The one part of it that you didn't address was the first part of my question. Do you support this change?
Yes, I do support
it.
I do.
Okay.
By the time I got through all my own bloviation, I forgot that you asked that. Yes, I do.
Yeah, I'll take a stab. I'm sorry. I got to see what the final language looks like before I decide if I'm a support or not. So I think we're talking about it at the upcoming board meeting on Thursday. The intention, I think, as I'm reading the intention on it, it is that when the board takes a vote, whether it's 7-0, 6-1, 5-3, whatever the decision of the board is in a way, that the members should expect that the staff and management will carry out the decision of the board. And to go out there and to publicly undermine it is doing a disservice to the members at that point. So that's part of what I'm thinking on this thing. Now, I intend to speak up if there is an issue that I think is putting the co-op in danger or problem. And in some respects, the proposed language on this Proposition 1 is actually looser than what exists before, because what it said now is that you as it exists right now in the language, is that the director's got to keep his mouth shut unless he can demonstrate a significant harm to the co-op. And that means, you know, prove it somehow. The new one basically says if you have a honest belief that there's a problem, go on and, you know, broadcast out. But if it's not a matter of significance like that, it's just like, I don't like that. My example that we've toyed with in the thing is like if we decided to put an aquarium up someplace, and people didn't like it, and, you know, I go out there and say, you know, yeah, I voted against that, you know, and these suckers that can't run this aquarium, and so on and so forth. So I've still got to see what the final language looks like right now.
Alex, would you like the other two? Would you like to hear from...
Sure. No, I just was curious to hear from the incumbents.
Because it sounds like it's a current issue, and whoever is elected will have to be dealing with it.
Sure.
Well, first off, I would defer to Glenna on that issue because she has explained a lot of that about, you know, over time, governing articles do change. I'm not up to date on the issue, but I will say this. Now that Vince has brought up the aquarium example, somebody will publish it someplace that Opalco's in the aquarium business, and then that will be a new issue for us to deal with at the next meeting. Bloviate. Yes.
I haven't been able to get that one through yet.
Yeah. It's got to start now.
I like aquariums.
Steve, would you like to... Do you have a comment you'd like to make?
I do. In February, at the board meeting in Friday Harbor, this policy, I believe, was on the action items list for the board, which suggests action was to be taken. In fact, Chris Thomerson, in a phone conversation about a week later, when I first looked online and could find no minutes, I called him with a few questions about the outcome of that meeting. And he said that after several of us had spoken in opposition to this policy, that it was tabled. I did not know that it was coming up soon again, but in general, it's my belief that robust and open debate is best for the members to become informed. While I recognize the benefits associated with a unified board, to the extent that that's possible, things do change, and to the extent that there isn't complete commitment on the part of every individual on that board, I think it serves the members better, not worse, to understand the distinctions in the thinking of the members on the board.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Glenna, anything you want to say?
I'm sad. I've been told that there's a rotation schedule for making sure that the copper's replaced and all wires are replaced, and I'm satisfied that they are monitoring anything like that. It's been my experience that since I've been up here that outages are going down, not up. In fact, it's sort of Seattle outages are going up, and these are going down, and it's crossing at the middle. The other, I think, somewhat of a question was, why are we spending more money on the grid, and why are we putting fiber in when... I think that was the question.
No. I want to know how come we need to spend $1 million for that spectrum.
Ah.
Okay.
The spectrum. First of all, I don't know that it's $1 million. That deal.
Well, 800,000 to a million.
How do you know that?
That's what they said. That you get on a line, and that's what they're forecasting.
Who?
The Opalco.
The Opalco people. Yeah. Hey, Steve, did you see any of that?
Yeah, Randy Cornelius's memo.
Okay.
Spectrum purchase analysis.
All right. Yeah. Okay. As long as there's some backing for what you said. It's. I wasn't there. I'm really gonna. If you will not give it too much. Let me just say, I'm gonna pass this to Vince because I wasn't on the board when that decision was made. So I'd give a stupid answer if I tried to answer the question.
Okay.
That I wasn't on the board?
You were on the board.
I knew nothing about the spectrum purchase.
We've been talking about it. I've been there.
No, you've been there. But when the decision was made to do it,
she just said she'd like to pass it to Vince. We're going to have Vince. I mean, that's your choice.
Yeah.
And then we're going to move on to the next one, unless somebody wants to ask some additional questions.
The potential spectrum purchase of the 700 megahertz frequency is going to be utilized for crew communication and data communication throughout the county. Now, the plan for the specific locations for that is being worked on by the engineering department right now. I don't know that there's any more than 8 to 10 location sites where that's going to basically be going up. The reason you want to choose something like that as opposed to 49 megahertz or go down to Radio Shack and get family service radios or something of that nature and nail them up on trees is because you got to have a little bit of a vision about what you can do in the future with this. So first off, that spectrum in conjunction with essentially what the cell phone people use, which is called LTE, gives you the most future bang for the buck that you're ever going to get out of putting up any kind of a radio system in this county. One, yeah.
Okay. This one side note. You know, I'm on UHF, okay? I have 50 radios on Mafakani. Okay. Up there in Bellingham, the people that you guys got an outdated radio system. For $25,000, you get a repeater from Port Angeles. There's one over in Bellingham. There's one over on Vancouver Island that could give you excellent radio.
Is your question why are they spending $25,000 other than
$25,000?
Can you make a cell phone call with that? No,
you can't.
Can you access data?
But the thing is that I mean that's pretty expensive, you know, for this little community to spend. You know, that's just to start with, you know, $800,000.
I dispute the number first off, but the point I'm trying to make
you
on this thing.
Dr. Wistronic, so
do you have a
question? Just let him.
I don't think I want to talk on that one anymore.
Okay.
I'll take a quick whack at it.
All right.
This is the type of issue which causes great concern in the community because Opalco does a poor job of explaining the benefits of their decision in common language. And I'm not in disagreement about buying spectrum, and I'm well aware of all the advantages of it. But we have members who do have analog mobile radio technology. It's called LMR, and it's a whole different ball game. But it is functional. So one of the problems that Opalco has is they make these decisions, and nobody's told why they do it. So that, once again, it's a messaging problem. Now, maybe they're just afraid that the members won't understand it and won't like it. And that just creates concern.
Let's see. Steve, would you like to make a comment, and then we're going to have a question from John.
Yeah, I'm a little confused. You know, I don't know the grid efficiency reasons for spending $7 million to change out to a new form of a vacuum switch. I don't understand that. I don't know if it's $25,000 or $50,000 or $100,000 to arrange a different kind of radio communication for crews rather than to buy the spectrum. This isn't the same spectrum associated with the WAPs, is it? Or is this some of just primarily internal communications you're talking about?
The internal communications structure, yes, and it would be part of an infrastructure that could be made available to the community if it chooses to use it.
Is it associated with wireless access points?
I guess you could say yes.
So it facilitates the broadband expansion?
Yeah.
And yet it's being charged to the electric operation, ostensibly because it's for crew purposes.
It's a dual-use technology, yes.
Thank you. That's clearer.
And being built to one side rather than both.
Right.
Yes.
To the ratepayers.
Okay. That's clarifying. Thank you.
Good.
John, and then Gordon would like to ask a question after you.
I've got a question about transparency in the future. I think both incumbents have addressed their view of transparency, and Glenn has referred to the corporation when it's actually a cooperative.
It's a corporation also.
And I'd like to hear from the two candidates for the board position what steps you would take briefly and specifically to increase transparency, to increase the feel of a true cooperative in these islands among all the members. But I think it's very important that we members, we electric members, know what's going on in our cooperative as member owners. And there's been suggestions to videotape and broadcast board meetings. I believe that's in the works. Perhaps it's going to be up at the annual meeting for a vote. It took a lot of pulling of teeth to get that through. So anyway, my question is, I would like to get from each of you two what steps you would take as new board members to increase transparency to the member owners and to instill a feeling that existed in the past.
We're talking about trust.
That we're all in this together.
I'm really glad you asked that question, and frankly, I think Vince just clarifying my question is an example of what the members deserve and need. At first, I didn't hear an answer coming. And when I pressed you on whether or not it lent itself to the infrastructure of broadband, you said yes. So now we understand. That relates to the question of whether grid decisions are being driven by broadband desires. And I couldn't agree more about the need for trust. And frankly, I don't think it's just transparency. I think part of it is deception. I think we're being fed little pieces of information to the extent that it is plausible. And for the most part, the big picture is being withheld as if we wouldn't understand or we wouldn't approve. And to answer what I would try to do if I were elected, I would appeal to what I'm certain is the good intent of the other members of the board to conduct itself in a way that trusts the ability of the members to understand what is being considered, to explain the options and their costs, their merits and demerits, and to look to the membership for guidance in terms of, especially on broadband, a radical redefinition of what the co-op is and does. I don't know any other way to do it. It's got to come from the board. And it's not just transparency, frankly. I'm a little concerned that it's more than that.
Thank you.
Well, I'm not concerned about deception. Anybody watch C-SPAN? Congress at Work?
I certainly have.
I don't think you're going to accomplish anything by just videotaping meetings and setting them everybody. I think the problem is, and I'm going to refer to it as messaging again, is that I'm not doubting, I haven't heard anything that Vince said that didn't make technical sense to me. The trust issue is there's obviously not a lot of trust with some people that all these decisions are being made in an open manner. So I think the goal is that as the board does things, they have to distill it down to what they're doing, how they're charging it off, what their reasoning is, and I think they have to communicate better with the membership. Now, on the electric side, I don't think you really want to go through, I mean, Vince started giving you all the data, and everyone said, too much, too much, too much. But I'm satisfied that they did due diligence to gather all this data about corrosion and line replacement. One of the issues of the board is the board serves above the operation. When the power goes out, the operations guy would have to put it back on. It's the board's function to think longer term and deal with some of these issues about how do we stay out of Tier 2? How do we do conservation to stay out of it? How do we respend that? What are the global warming impacts? Those are all things that don't simply distill to, well, how does it affect my bill and why did we spend that money? Because that's the short view. So I'm going to have to sit in the middle again and go, I'm not hearing anything which is deceptive, but I'm not seeing a good job of letting you know why we're doing things.
From the first half of Vince's answer regarding the 700 megahertz purchase, did you understand that it led itself to the broadband infrastructure?
I knew that, yeah.
You knew that. Did you understand it from what he said?
No.
Thank you.
But I knew that.
And in terms of the proposal...
John, do you have a follow-up question? Because Gordon is...
You know,
stated that you're in the middle and you're wishy-washy about this and that. I'd like to get
wishy-washy.
I never said wishy-washy.
Squishy.
I said we need to keep squishy. we need to keep an eye on those squishy things.
I would like to hear from you how you would steer the board, influence the board, whatever, to be more communicative. How would you do that? What would your steps be if you'd be specific rather than saying, I trust everybody and I'm just going to go ahead?
Well, I only trust people that I can get access to. There's an awful lot of things from the outside that I would like to know about many of these issues. You know, broadband is the tip of the whip, okay? It's not where the bulk of the money is spent. It's not where the bulk of the work is done. But it's the tip of the whip of where this thing is going. So I think my role on the board is to, one, digest all this highly technical information, break it down into relatively straightforward communication, which we can message the community with. And I don't think Opalco is doing a good job of that. So that would be my function, is to listen to these arguments and participate in that, but also be more effective at communicating with the membership of why we're doing what we're doing. And believe me, there's a lot of things that companies do strategically that people who just look at their bill don't like. Because there's a lot of people who just look at their bill and go, how can you make this go down by not doing anything? This is the same attitude we see. Don't get me started on county roads where they do a study and go, we need to fix the roads on a rotating basis, and they divert the funds and go do it. Bob, do you know anything about that?
Yeah,
you do. So, but once again, it's a messaging issue. And like I said earlier, when I ask a question and don't get an answer, that tells me one of two things. Either you haven't thought about it or you don't like the answer. So purchase spectrum LTE for operations might be in the category of we didn't like the answer. But that's...
Or didn't want the people to know it.
Well, you know, it's pretty easy to figure out.
Gordon, would you like to... Gordon,
they're done with that.
Yeah, are you all after that? Mm-hmm. And then Chom, and then Steve, because you've had one. So Gordon, Chom, Steve.
I'm afraid my question or observation are...
Darling, you can go wherever you want. This is like a forum. We need to hear from
you. I'm not a technocrat or guru of computers and all that. But I was interested in a comment about wood stove emissions. Being unaware, I was using that instead of electricity to cut down on the fumes into your wine. But I appreciate your comment. What I remember from discussions, and I just kind of followed this lightly along with the program, was originally when the proposal was put out, there was concern that it would affect the financial stability of the co-op. Mm. And so the number of people that apparently wanted to use the service was minimal compared to the total population. But if it was going to do something to improve the competitiveness of the island economically, then it needed to be seriously looked at. So when I heard that...
What was your question to
me? I'm going to get right there.
Okay.
When I heard that they were linking with CenturyLink, I thought, well, now there's a way to spread costs. There was a time in Chicago to do this, and I think you've alluded it's not something to happen. Now, everybody seems to be against CenturyLink. Are there other carriers, or is CenturyLink still the best option to partner with rather than take on all this expense for the utility? Am I hearing right that the utility's trying
to... Let me take a bite at that one.
Okay.
So,
anybody mind? Mm-hmm. Brian goes.
Educate me.
So we own some fiber. It's fast and it gets us to the mainland. When I heard that there was a plan to say, let's give our fiber to the telephone company and put them between me and my fiber, I thought, well, that's a horrible idea. Because what does a phone company that has no interest in us locally add to the picture? Now, you could make an argument that can deliver last mile, and that's worth looking into. And that's why I repeat to your question and all the rest of them. It doesn't have to be the Opalco network to the exclusion of everything else. And that shouldn't even be a goal. Because their fiber got cut, but it could have been Opalco's. And next time it might be. Now, it's less likely because ours are on power cables and they're big and fat and heavy, whereas theirs are light and they float around more. But we need to have multiple scenarios during which we can accommodate these things. So, yes, working with people under the right circumstances is a positive thing. The goal here is not to put CenturyLink out of business, but I think it's been proven relying on them is probably not in our best interest.
Is there another partner that would make more sense?
Yeah, what I
share the cost of my point.
Sure. I support basically what I've stated for ever I got on this thing is that the network that we got should be made available to anybody to use at a fair and equal basis. So that means if the ISPs want to come and connect up, go for it. If CenturyLink wanted to use it and were willing to aid in the construction of cost to do it and hook up, fine, go for it. The cell phone companies, I've talked to a vice president at T-Mobile about this, and what he said is, well, one, T-Mobile's not building out any more infrastructure in there, but if you ever get one of these things in place, we'll be happy to cut a deal with you for cell time, and you know, we'll give you 20 cents a minute or something and let you hook up to our system. So, yeah, I'm all in favor with anybody that can add value to this thing that we've got in the ground. We've got to be open to the option to do
point,
it.
At this point, you're saying that Smokehouse is totally expensive, and then if they get some partners in later on, they'll have to pay expense.
Anybody that would...
I don't hear partners, I hear customers.
No. If an ISP comes in and says, I'll build out last mile, that's a partner. Absolutely.
It's an ISP.
Internet service provider.
Like Rock Island.
Rock Island's a good example because Rock Island actually has some off-island capability.
But I'm still kind of confused. What's proposed here is, well, Palco will assume the cost of the system.
No, not the last mile. This is a complete...
Maybe we should go back a little further and explain the difference between the infrastructure, the backbone, and the last mile.
You played the middle mile.
Okay.
It costs a lot of money to get the cable from the mainland here. That's a, no joke, sunk cost. Okay? It's under the water, it's there. It's expensive. You don't really want to mess with that. Throw in some glass in there is cheap. Glass doesn't come in little pipes. They're all pretty good size. That's a good thing. So we get a lot of capacity. Now, as long as they've run it, basically what Opalco has now is a fiber ring. There's data, very reliable, very good speed, and it moves things around. It runs right across the top of my property. I can see it. I can walk up and open a cover and look at it. But I can't connect to it.
All you can do is get the checkbook out.
All I have to do is get the checkbook out. And I'm willing to do that. I'm in process of doing that. And it's not going to be cheap. It's going to cost thousands of dollars to make that connection.
Are you willing to pay $90 a month?
So right now, I pay $40 to Rock Island and $60 to the phone company. So I pay $100 a month for 1 megabit. Would I pay $90 for 10? That's a no-brainer.
You still have to have your telephone because it doesn't care.
You know what, you guys? Gordon asked a question.
Yeah, let's get back to his question.
I believe you all answered it to the best that you could. We've got limited time here. I'd really like to get to Chom, and I'd like to get to Steve, and then I'd like to have one wrap-up question, okay. If that's okay.
I think afterwards,
this type of deeper understanding could be, you know, directly one-on-one, if that's good by you. Okay, Chom.
Yeah, one quick comment and one question. The comment is that... it's not just transparency that members are seeking. I think we also would like to be partners in making decisions. So messaging also doesn't work. What messaging implies a one-way communication. We want two-way communication before making policy decisions. And that's something that I look to see. Now, to my question, I wonder if each of you could perhaps do a very quick SWOT analysis of Opalco. SWOT is strength, weaknesses, opportunity, and threats. So looking, you know, on the horizon, you know, give a quick SWOT analysis, and what changes would you try to steer Opalco towards if you were elected?
And where would you like to start?
I'll start from maybe this end. Okay, Steve.
Well, its strengths, I believe, are its respectable history of being a solid power co-op. And my limited participation as a member in the past and knowledge of the individuals on the board led me to respect them and their business acumen and their trustworthiness enormously. I believe a weakness is, whether it's a perception problem or a real problem, that there is an absence of that two-way communication that you're talking about. And those of us who have doubts about broadband investment and the wisdom of it and the future of the co-op because of that are treated as critics to be defended against, it seems. And while I won't go there. The opportunity, I believe, is that we can establish a better broadband network with partners, not just customers connecting or utilizing the infrastructure that we build. And we can reestablish a broader trust of the members for the board, but it's got to be through real, understandable, two-way communication. I mean, it's not just giving us the information and hoping we understand it and approve what they suggest we do, but them seeking real input from us and listening to it, giving it credibility, not discounting it the way it's felt in the recent past. The threat, well, obviously for me, I'm going to put number one at an enormous investment in a wholly owned Opalco broadband infrastructure that gets beat up by competition or technology leapfrog 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years down the road. And then it's a matter of the electric ratepayer paying not just what is currently being charged to the electric grid and may or may not actually serve the electric grid, but the entire thing is going to have to be paid by the ratepayer if it fails, because competition will emerge and technology will improve.
Steve, in the interest of time, I'm going to have us go along, but thank you very much. Brian, do you want to give a quick...
I'll do a quick one. Help me out with SWOTs. We'll go with strength first.
Strengths, weaknesses.
Big power storms, power's going out in Puget Sound. I'm sitting there, it's all fine. I look around, I just hear confirmed again, we're predominantly underground, lesser threat, very big strength. Then I do something interesting. I jump on the web and go, I wonder what those folks in Puget Sound Energy that don't have any power, I wonder what their bill looks like. Because we all know everything's more expensive on the island. So I ran the numbers. Our power's cheaper than their power. What does that tell me? The electric co-op is working. That's your strength. W, weakness?
Yeah.
So what's the weakness? I don't see a big weakness. What I see is a lot of things in the opportunity, which can slide back and forth between is it an opportunity or a weakness. Steve's professing that opportunity to build out a network is going to be our future failure, and I'm not convinced of that. Is it a possibility? Sure. Is it a likelihood? No, that's our job, not to make that happen. Threat, that's an easy one. All this divisiveness. When I hear words like deception and hiding things and the different viewpoints of people about, you know, these decisions are being biased by that, the real threat is in the community. It's not at Opalco.
Vince, would you like to? Hey, everybody's entitled to their opinion,
right? Yeah.
So that's why we have forums, so that we can actually listen.
Okay, strengths. Number one is the people in Opalco. I think, as I said at the opening remarks on this, the crew is amazing. They're dedicated. They're hardworking. It's only 53 and a half, basically. And they pull off an amazing amount of stuff for the community. The weakness, I absolutely agree on the messaging. I mean, going through the experience with the broadband in the last year or so, the endless hours of trying to figure out how to actually talk with people and get feedback in and out. I think it's a challenge for any entity in this community to get out there. We don't have television. We don't have vehicles. You know, we got emails and stuff. So, I mean, if we collectively can solve that problem, it's good for the county, it's good for Opalco, it's good for water districts, it's good for everybody. So that two-way communication, whether it's with technology or sending people door-to-door, that's something to be worked on. The opportunities, I utterly believe building out the electric grid the way we're doing it right now and then making it available for the community to use is an incredible opportunity, and it's one we should not pass up. I do not feel that competitive threat from the cell phone companies nor CenturyLink, because you've seen how difficult it is here to do the financials. They got bean counters and look at the same thing. They are not going to put that money into this community to do that stuff. I don't believe that some third party is going to come down here with $13 or $14 million and try to set up their own wireless internet service provider business, because the business is too hard to come by. So I see just the opposite problem. The threat is not doing something because nobody else is going to do it for us. The community's got to figure it out.
Glenna, I think the other, aside from the fact that my personal experience is that the electricity stays on better all the time, which is a major strength for an electric company. I also am aware now, in a way I was not aware when I was simply a consumer of the electricity, how well run this company is. I gather that there was a time in the not so distant past when financially it was having some issues and was not being carefully overseen, but that it's considered by our lender and by other member organizations as one of the models for a very small electric company in terms of its oversight and its financial prudence. I want to reemphasize that in terms of finances, the amount of emphasis on broadband just pales in comparison to some of the other things the company is doing. In terms of weaknesses, I don't mean to seem like a broken record, but yeah, I think, and I have thought right along, that clearly if people are concerned enough to come out for a board of director election, there is something in terms of communication that's a problem. I was looking at some admittedly bigger co-ops and how they communicate with their members, and they have interactive things and stuff like that. We haven't really had the budget to do a big fancy thing, but it's obvious from here and from the town halls that we did, which were, I learned a lot from them, that we do need to be listening to people, and we need to find a way to institutionalize that, not just have it be occasional. So I think that has been a weakness. In terms of opportunity, I think that we have an opportunity to, and as Vince has said it at times, although didn't get a chance to say it tonight, we have a chance for this company to take charge of the electrical needs and the conservation needs of this whole community in a way that makes it local. We can't necessarily affect the whole country or the whole state, but we can affect this county in terms of how we generate and save electricity. In terms of threats, I think one of the biggest threats coming up are climate change, whether it's caused by people or not, it's still happening. The increasing demand on BPA, possibly from increased population and also from politics. We have our contract with BPA is up in 2028, but even before that, there are things that are going to adversely possibly affect our ability to get clean, cheap, reliable energy from them. And we can meet those threats by starting to plan now, which we have been doing. We need to plan immediately for how to meet those threats, and that's something that we're doing.
We're about ready to close our forum here, but Steve, you had a question, and I want to know, Dan, are you having
a
moment for a question?
Sure.
Because it is now 10 minutes till 6. We are ending exactly at 6:15 because Islands Energy Coalition always ends on time. That's just part of what we do. So And anyway, we can rearrange the schedule a little bit, because most important is questions and answers. So, Steve, if you don't mind, I'm trying to do first people first, and you've already asked one, so I'll do you second. So Dan Post, and then Steve, and please be cognizant of the time. Sorry, but it is running late.
I'm going to change up a little bit. Okay. Vince mentions, he's the only one who mentioned safety. 40 years ago, a friend of mine died electrocuted in Palco. His children's name are Jessica and Eric. Mm-hmm. Just this past year, we had a guy injured. So does the board set the policy to turn off the power and interrupt service for safety's sake, or do they just allow the workers to work hotlines?
No. By any stretch of the imagination. There's a huge safety manual in there, and they have regular safety meetings and stuff. I mean, the board doesn't set specific policies. We basically say we want to see the staff and management adopt best safe practices and execute, and we check on that all the time. So it's kind of a horrifying thought. No.
So should they set policy, because they were working on hot lines from the Ferry Road clear down Center Road last year, I believe they, you know, moved all these hot lines. Why don't they turn them off and move them? For safety's sake is what I'm saying. And shouldn't the board, who's in charge, set that policy?
So if Randy Cornelius was here, who with only 40 years or so in here, he would tell you that there are procedures for working on hot lines, which are well established and done in the community. You don't always have to turn stuff off, because it can be done safely. And internally, they've got policies to do that. The accident you're referring to, I haven't seen the final report on that, so I can't really say what the exact cause of it was, but I don't think it was a policy problem involved in there. There was some human error involved.
I mean, I know for a fact that every now and then where I live, we get called up for a previously unexpected outage because they're turning it off to do something. And not too long ago, they turned all the power in my area off so they could do some replacement stuff that I saw them doing. It's definitely, obviously, it's not a board decision to make specific policy about how workers go about their work, but we have said over and over that safety is our first priority, and we will do whatever possible to keep people from getting hurt.
Dan, do you feel like they answered your question?
I said, you know, teach my kids safety first. You know, safety is more important than not interrupted service.
Yes. I agree.
You've heard.
Yeah, okay.
Steve.
Yeah, getting back to the issue of deception, at the town hall meetings here, the chairman of the board specifically said the 700 megahertz spectrum was purchased only, or hadn't been purchased yet, but he said that it was only for the crew's safety, because sometimes they're working in places where they can't get a signal on their cell phones or their radios. Now, this 700 megahertz network won't be up and running for many years yet, and yet you could put up a UHF system in a matter of weeks or months.
I got to grab this one, Steve.
Is your
so? First of all, what the chairman said was an obvious deception. To say that it was 700 megahertz, this monster million-dollar thing, was only for the crew's safety. That's a typical kind of thing you hear from Opalco board members. They just seem to blurt out whatever comes in their head at any moment. And then we had another incident recently where a member wanted to get some information on Opalco's investments. They left some spaces blank on their income tax filing, which you or I couldn't get away with, but they did it.
And so the question
and
is...
He wanted to know what those investments were, and Opalco wouldn't answer. In fact, Randy said he was insulted by the question. So my question is, what do you guys think about
it? Can I go question one UHF? I attend the all chiefs meeting. That's the sheriff, all four fire chiefs, EMS, EMTs, everything in the county. At every single meeting, they bring up the fact that the UHF, VHF, and low VHF propagation in the county is completely inadequate. And there are many, many, many spots where there's little or no communications whatsoever. That's a long-standing problem. It's so bad that they actually say, we don't even want to talk about it because no one's going to do anything about it. So, if by putting this in place, and this hasn't been revealed, it also extends to what?
Putting what in place?
If by putting the 700 megahertz poles in place, if that includes public safety, it would be a huge boon to the islands. But I haven't heard that yet.
But the question was about deception.
Well, I can't answer that. I'm on the board.
The question was about what the chairman of the
board said. But I can tell you, you can't just throw some UHF at it. That's not. That's been done. That doesn't work.
Oh, Wistronics and Bellingham. They'll give you a little different story.
Steve,
because they want to sell your equipment, yes.
And then Glenna, and then Vince, and then we're going to wrap up to finals.
So okay, would you like to answer Steve's question?
Yes.
Okay, just
to answer Steve's question.
Okay.
Steve, would you like Steve.
Steve, do you have anything to say? You're not on the board.
No, this sounded like a question for the incumbents to address their thoughts on this specific example of what appears to be deception, and I can't comment on that.
Okay, so Glenna and then Ben.
All right. I think there's some kind of language semantic issue here. Just because something has a dual purpose doesn't mean it wasn't purchased for one purpose. The fact that you can use something for something else, not the same. I don't remember what Chris said specifically. I don't remember what Steve asked. To call it, you know, to accuse it of deception for an answer that may or may not have been as fully encompassing as you wanted, I can't answer that. As to the question of stuff about income tax returns, I have no idea what you're talking about. Certainly, if I were to learn as a board member with financial oversight over the co-op, if I learned that somebody was falsifying a tax return, you better believe I wouldn't approve of it, and I would do something about it.
Vince, would you like to have?
Yeah, on the 990 tax return, if it's blank, because I don't think there is anything there. I don't think you can get away with not filling that information in. I mean, you know, somebody's going to jail, so.
You get away with a lot on a 990 form, but we just wanted to know what it was.
I'm not aware, okay, maybe it's my ignorance. I'm not aware that we invest in anything, basically.
As board members, is it fair for Steve to ask you to, you know, to answer that?
Sure.
Because it sounds like neither of you know what it is.
Yeah.
But he's asked a question, sounds like he has some concerns and
yeah, I'd be certainly interested to know what exactly the specific.
I might learn something, but I don't.
Sure.
I don't.
So you'll get absolutely.
You're thinking that there's like money put into stocks or portfolios or something. I mean,
yeah, it says
investments.
Yeah, what exactly does
what
it
say?
It says financial derivatives.
Yeah.
And the space for book value and market value are blank.
Of what?
So we just
book value and market value are blank.
Of what?
I will find out. I think I don't
the
think
derivatives.
I don't think we do any of that basically.
Okay, so this is a case where if you could get back, I think it would satisfy.
I think we're entitled to that information and not to hear from Randy.
I totally agree.
So you guys, we have a moment now because I'm starting to feel that the energy. I mean, we've been in here a long time and everybody's. See, which is okay because it's good. Yeah, we're going to be nice. Look at Dwight. He is a model of a relaxed citizen. Now, I would like to have just a real brief close. Like, you know, one of those things where it's almost like a slogan. Why should we vote for you? I'd like to give each one of them just a moment to say that. Why should we vote for you in this upcoming election? And then, sure, yeah. And then I just have a closing statement that I want to make. All right, so.
How long? 3 minutes.
I've been very good. I've been really good. I have not been interrupted.
2 minutes each?
Yeah, so 2 minutes each. And how do you guys want to start? Glenna, we'll start with you.
Well, I guess I want to be sort of namby-pamby and start by thanking the Islands Energy Coalition for doing that. We were trying to find somebody who would do a candidates forum, and you're the only people that stepped up to the plate on this.
Yay! So,
I mean, I've run for political office, and this is just as painful in some respects. I'm doing a good job on the Opalco board. I am qualified to work on that kind of a board. I like what I'm doing. I care about the community. I've educated myself pretty well, and I present a different kind of background than the techie guys, and I would ask for your vote.
I'm a techie guy, but I got a heart. Three years ago in this room, I gave a talk on climate change. I had done some research on it at the time and was pretty concerned about stuff that was coming down the pike, and I believe that Opalco can be one of the most important entities in this county towards helping us do something about that. So I want to work on that problem, and I hope to get reelected.
Well, I'm the challenger. As you know, most of the time the incumbents just win because most people don't actually vote. I came here for a personal reason because I didn't like how some things were being handled, and I found it a lack of transparency. I didn't find any deception, but I found a lack of transparency. I've learned a tremendous amount just sitting here listening to people ask questions and the great answers we got to a lot of things. I would ask for your vote because I think you have to look at the existing board and the composition of it and ask yourself, is the current composition meeting all of your issues? And if not, here I sit, like I said before, firmly in the middle, not looking for deception and to destroy broadband and everything else, but to have that shepherd process of how do we guide this to a successful completion while keeping in mind the fact that we don't have an absolute consensus to drive this thing.
I don't think anybody wants to destroy broadband, and I think almost everybody wants it, including me. What we've asked for are answers to our questions and a demonstration of the data that convinces this board that it makes financial sense for the members in the future. And as a democratically run organization, as we are reminded, perhaps this significant change in the core purpose of the co-op ought to be up to the members to vote on. First, we need the information. And I won't ask for your vote. I would ask you to talk to other members and see what they think about this, because this is a big deal. Glenna may think it's one of many very important points, and maybe she's right. Right now, given the timing of the situation and the millions of dollars associated with this project, I think it's the most important thing. And it relates very closely to the question of transparency and board communication, effective communication and listening to the membership.
Thank you. Okay, so I have a few closing comments here. First of all, I am really, really impressed with the four of you. You are well-informed. You're running for office. You are putting yourselves out there. You tried, each one of you, to be articulate today. Personally, what I'm looking for is representation from, I'm a co-op member. And a co-op is a big deal in my world. It's different than a corporation. I know that, you know, legal speak, they are corporations as well. But it really is a co-op, and co-op members are important in the process. When I watch what happens in Opalco, I often see there's very few people that actually get involved or even know. When I ask people, they'll tell me, oh, I've lived here 30 years. I've never voted in an Opalco election. I'm like, vote. You know, it's vote. So I'm going to challenge all of you guys. Each of you knows 100 people, I am sure. I want you to choose who you're going to vote for here. Okay, make your decision based on what you heard and try and influence people and get people to vote. This is a democracy, and co-ops operate best when the members are engaged and involved. And I want us all to be involved. We may not have always liked everything we heard. For instance,
I am not somebody that believes whenever there's dissent that that is a threat. I actually think that it is a, what do I need to be listening and tuning into a little bit better, even as a member? You know, sometimes I get tired of people because I'm on boards and things and they're nipping at my heels and stuff. You know, stay away from me. But actually, it's really a good indicator of something is a little bit amiss here. And what is it? So I really want to encourage us all to remember, cooperative, cooperative, cooperative. This is ours. These people are all giving their time, wanting to represent us. They all were quite forthright. We did put little truth serums in their waters, and I saw them all sipping from it. So what they spoke here was authentic, and it was them. And I really, again, encourage all of you to try and find at least 100 of your friends and get them to vote in this election. This is a really big deal. Ocalco, I mean, every one of these people said it. We can start
sort of right now.
Yeah, we can start voting now online. And you can vote all the way up until the annual general meeting, which is held on
You'll get a ballot in the mail, too.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but anyway, you can start right now. And I also want to thank all of you. This was 2 hours, and I don't know about you. I've been following Opelco for a long time now, but I still learned things here that are going to influence me on who I vote for. And I really hope that you all will like spread the word, and may the best two people represent us in our co-op. So if nobody else has anything to say, we'll close the meeting 7 minutes early.
Good.
Thank you.